Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, October 11th, 2020. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the Restore Illinois numbers. Phase 4, Day 108. By the numbers, Illinois has 316,423 cases. That's an increase of 2,905. With 8,975 deaths, that's an increase of 31. Champaign County has 5,223, that's up 36. Douglas has 370. Vermilion has 1,050. Illinois impact total, 7-day rates are down in Champaign County. 0.5% positivity. Lowest is on campus, 0.2%. Declining in Champaign County, 7-day positivity rate of 0.6% to 0.5%, and active cases by 13 to 365. Rising is recovered cases by 49 to 4,831, and hospitalizations by 2 to 4. And close contacts in quarantine by 97 to 1,165. 10 cases emerged from 9,867 tests on campus, a rate of 0.1%. For the second straight day, the U of I's 7-day rate stayed at 0.2%, the lowest point since August 18th. 2 days after students started moving in for the semester. 17 new cases, ranging from a toddler to a resident in their 90s, were reported in Vermilion County a day after it was placed on the state's coronavirus warning list. 9 residents are hospitalized, down from 1 on Friday. And Sunday special, Rules of the Road, data-driven. Among casualties of COVID-19, speeding tickets, by Ben Zichterman. As COVID-19 spread this spring, speeding tickets dropped in Champaign-Urbana and across the state. According to data released by the News Gazette, the Champaign-Urbana and University of Illinois Police Departments issued 161 speeding tickets in February. 2 months later, they handed out just 2. Similar drops were seen by Rantoul and Illinois State Police. And it wasn't because drivers suddenly stopped speeding altogether. Instead, police officials attributed the downward trend to fewer vehicles being on the road, particularly during the statewide stay-at-home order and on campus when students left. Another factor, temporary policies to reduce the spread of COVID-19 by stopping fewer people for minor infractions. That's what happened with Champaign Police's Strategic Traffic Enforcement Program, Department spokesman Tom Yellick acknowledged. While we were in the early stages of understanding COVID-19 and its impact, we did reduce enforcement for minor traffic violations in the interest of public health and for the well-being of our own officers while proper protocol adjustments were being made in response to the pandemic, he said. Minor traffic accidents also weren't investigated unless there was an injury or a tow truck was needed, he said. Urbana Police Chief Bryant Serafin also attributed the decline in speeding tickets to the pandemic. In March, we really restricted traffic stops, he said. Any way to minimize the amount of contact we were having with citizens, and we made a variety of other changes as well, whether it's taking reports over the phone or referring people to the website for some low-level issues. In Rantoul, 188 speeding tickets were issued from March 1 to October 1. That's down from 293 during the same period last year, Chief Tony Brown said. Initially, we had really asked the officers to look at limiting exposure and contact with people, and that included traffic stops, Brown said. He said speeding tickets are not a significant part of Rantoul's budget. At the U of I, police spokesman Pat Wade said there weren't any policy changes responsible for the reduction in speeding tickets, but they still decreased once students left town. U of I police typically hand out about 20 speeding tickets a month. Their early pandemic totals, 9 in March, 1 in April, 2 in May, 4 in June, 14 in July, and 5 in August. With students and staff going remote, we were basically in summer mode as far as the campus population, beginning in March, Wade said. Even now, we're not fully back to the traffic we would normally see. Officers are still out there doing the same traffic enforcement, but there just are not as many cars on the road speeding, not on campus anyway. Illinois State Police saw a similar drop in tickets, both in local District 10 and statewide. From March 16th to May 6th last year, 13,885 speeding tickets were issued across the state, 451 of them in District 10. During the same period this year, 1,396 were issued statewide, including 60 in District 10. During the governor's shelter-in-place order, there are far fewer cars on the road, Trooper Mindy Carroll said in May. When there is less traffic, there may be a temptation to exceed the posted speed limit. The Illinois State Police is asking the motoring public to fight this temptation. Slow down and pay attention to the road so first responders do not have to respond to a traffic crash or stop you for speeding. Lest anyone be tempted to drive fast, police say they're no longer limiting enforcement of speeding. From March 16th to October 8th, state police issued 2,218 tickets in District 10, just two fewer than a year ago. As we've learned about the virus and have officers with masks, we have started to reinitiate some of these efforts, Serafin said. He said the city regularly gets complaints about speeding, so we started pushing out some of our selective traffic control. Continuing on the front page, Illinois Illini basketball and the coronavirus. Lights, camera, and hopefully some action. On the eve of practice, team and its fans still adjusting to new routine, by Scott Ritchie. Need a sign that the 2021 college basketball season will play out like no other before it? How about an official team photo for the Illinois men's basketball team, with players, coaches, and staff alike masked up? Or the temporary basketball hoops installed inside Memorial Stadium for players who couldn't make it past the protocol-enforced doors at Ubin Basketball Complex? The topper, of course, is the fact that the Illini will run their first official practice Wednesday and, unless the situation changes in a hurry, will do so without their schedule finalized. COVID 2020, Illinois coach Brad Underwood said, expect the unexpected and expect change tomorrow or in an hour. I think I learned early on in this process that my patience was going to be tested. As much as I'd like to know, it's the unknown that I can't control, he said. You're literally rolling with the punches. There's a blank sheet of paper in front of me. That is our schedule. We talk about COVID every day. We talk about trying to control that. All you have to do is look at any professional sport outside the NBA who's had a perfect bubble. You look at any other sport and you're seeing lapses. That stuff is uncontrollable. We can't say what happens tomorrow if two guys are positive or whatever it is. It's COVID 2020. It's the year of not having a lot of knowns. But we'll get there. The uncertainty of how exactly the 2021 college basketball season will play out, of course, reaches further than just Underwood's team. Fan groups like the Illini Rebounders Club and Orange Crush are in holding patterns too. They have plans for how they'll address a season in a pandemic, but firming them up requires an actual schedule of games. We always have to work around the team schedule and coach's schedule to schedule our events, said Rebounders President Bruce Knight. We plan to do some virtual events and have a chance for our members to hear from coach that way, maybe some players. Those virtual events will replace the semi-regular luncheons the Rebounders typically host throughout the season. Underwood, or one of his assistants, and sometimes a player or two, have been regular guests. The original plan for the 2021 season was to add a couple happy hour events to the traditional luncheons. Now, any Rebounders events will go virtual. They already have one in the books and, in fact, with a Zoom call with Underwood among the benefits of playing in the Rebounders' annual golf outing that still happened this summer. We didn't have a huge group like we would hope to have for a lunch, so it was more intimate, Knight said of the post-golf call. People were able to unmute themselves and ask questions. It went over really well. Doing it with large numbers will be a way different experience, so we'll have to figure out how that works. A lot of our members are older and may not be comfortable on Zoom. There's another potential issue for us we've talked about. But, on the other hand, families are Zooming with their grandparents. I think everybody has had some exposure to Zoom at this point in time. If we need to, we'll put tutorials on our website. The Rebounders aren't the only fan group trending toward virtual events for the 2021 college basketball season. The Orange Crush, while still holding out some hope for even limited in-person attendance at State Farm Center, have had preliminary discussions about potential virtual events while also waiting for a schedule. We're kind of reworking the memberships so they cost less and you get more things out of it, said Communications Chairman Luca Rapani. Now, when you are involved in the Orange Crush, you probably won't be guaranteed a seat. We're doing more merchandise things. Honestly, the team has been kind of unresponsive on things we've been reaching out to them for. We're just waiting to see what the rules are in place. It's kind of unwise to start planning when there's so many things that could happen. It's a little strange. The uncertainty of the 2021 season is also affecting how Illinois games might be called on the Fighting Illini Sports Network. Voice of the Illini, Brian Barnhart, said he still expects to call games alongside former Illinois standouts Deion Thomas or Doug Altenberger at State Farm Center. Just maybe not from their traditional spot courtside next to the Illini bench. I think whatever we do in football will probably help determine what goes on in basketball, Barnhart said. Radio calls for basketball road games are also to be determined. The Illinois radio crew might wind up calling games from either a studio or from an empty State Farm Center with the Illini playing elsewhere. Basketball is probably a little easier to do off the TV than football, I would think, but a couple of other camera angles would certainly help, Barnhart said. The more angles you can have, the more feeds you can have, will make it that much easier. It will still feel a little strange, but obviously, if that's what we have to do, we have to do it. The uncertainty of the coming basketball season and likely restrictions because of the pandemic hits a little different given that this year's Illinois team is arguably the best in nearly two decades. Expectations are sky high and fans might not see a single game in person. There were a few games last year, really the last four or five conference games, that were really like must-attend events for people on campus, Rippani said. Everyone was talking about it all the time. You knew it was a sellout. To think we could have a game like that and have practically no one, or literally no one, in State Farm Center is really, really disappointing. I think home court advantage has the biggest effect in college basketball. To have so little people there, it won't be as tangible of an effect, which will be a shame. Continuing on the front page with the opinion of Tom Kasich. Farney for president. Sounds good to him. Former Champaign County Auditor and Treasurer John Farney can't quite kick the political habit. Although he was defeated in 2018 in his campaign for a full four-year term as county treasurer, the rural Urbana Republican is back this November as a declared write-in candidate for President of the United States. I did that after hearing so many people say that I've got nobody to vote for. In a lot of ways, I agreed with them, said Farney, who is now a mortgage broker for Molitor Financial Group. I'm not thrilled with any of our choices. He wasn't thrilled 4 years ago either, he acknowledged, and wrote in Ohio Governor John Kasich's name for president. Farney had run that year as a Republican delegate candidate for Kasich. A write-in vote for Farney will count, but only in Champaign County. Only there is he a declared candidate. I have probably 100 old county auditor signs up in my shed, he said. So I put up a sign at the Brookings Center early voting facility, and I've actually made up about 10 others with funny sayings, usually related to something like, why not, he said. I did put one in former county board member Greg Knott's front yard that says, vote Farney, he drinks Miller, not Corona. He adjusted an old Trump yard sign to read, rum, make America great again. He said he still considers himself a Republican and is supporting Republican candidates for the most part, particularly the county GOP slate. This is entirely in good humor. It's just for fun because the presidential race this year is so doggone nasty, Farney said. His goal is 1,000 write-in votes. A few other parents at Holy Cross School are campaign helpers, he said. I told them, you guys do the work. I'm not going to do any of it, but go ahead, he said. Farm Bureau backs tax increase. In something of a surprise, the Champaign County Farm Bureau is supporting a property tax increase for the Champaign County Forest Preserve District, an item on the November 3rd ballot. The Forest Preserve District is seeking a 1.6% increase in its property tax rate, an amount that would cost the owner of a $100,000 home about $5.33 a year. For the owner of an 80-acre parcel with very good productivity, the cost increase would amount to $8.30 a year. Farm Bureau traditionally opposes property tax increases. It's a difference, yes, but our Governmental Affairs Committee heard the presentation from the Forest Preserve and then they presented it to our Board of Directors and they decided to support it, said Brad Eukin, manager of the County Bureau. If I had to summarize, I'd say that this is primarily going to maintenance, Eukin said. And I think there were several comments that if we looked at how they spent their money versus how the state spent, they've spent their money a lot better and have been more responsible with it. If successful, it would be the first voter-approved tax increase in the Forest Preserve District's 72-year history. Family feud. Ashley Crow, the daughter of State Representative Brad Holbrook, Republican Shelbyville, has endorsed her father's opponent in the 102nd House District race. Crow, who lives in Charleston, recorded social media endorsements for Democrat Mitchell Esslinger of Strasburg. One of them hits Holbrook for his proposal to separate Chicago from the rest of Illinois. In a time when no one is listening to each other and everyone is fighting, my dad proposed that Chicago secede from Illinois, based on a lie, she said. The people of Illinois are not tearing the state apart. Greed, moral corruption, and career politicians are. In another, she condemns her father for voting against a bill to limit insurance copays for insulin. Voting against affordable insulin to keep profits high for drug companies is not rural values, Crow said. If he cared about rural values, he wouldn't keep fighting to protect corporate interests. For that reason, I'm endorsing Mitchell Esslinger. Chamber PAC contributions. Champaign County's Business Empowered Political Action Committee, the political arm of the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce, has made contributions to four Republican candidates in the November 3rd election. Each of these candidates got $500 from the group. State Representative Mike Marin of Fithian, Champaign County Recorder Mark Sheldon, Champaign County Circuit Clerk Katie Blakeman, and County Board Member John Rector. Tom Kasich's column appears on Sundays in the News Gazette, and he can be reached at kasich@newsgazette.com. Continuing with Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Russell. Bob Bender celebrated his latest golf win, not at the 19th hole, but at his apartment at Clark Lindsay Village in Urbana. I came home and took a nap, the 83-year-old ringer said Thursday. Then I had a glass of wine with dinner and am going to watch the Bears. It was Bender who, 4 years ago, helped introduce the annual putting tournament on Clark Lindsay's Hidden Gem, a turf green complete with seven holes in its masterpiece garden. It might not rival the scene at, say, Augusta National, but the sweet layout, which at one time included a sand trap and rough, has allowed the retired crowd to sharpen their golf skills for 20 years or so. Bender, who picked up the sport as a professor at the University of Illinois and was a member of the Urbana Country Club, teamed with Rena Lake, Randy Hauser, and Kathy Eckner to win in a playoff Thursday. Their reward wasn't a green jacket, but bobblehead trophies, with a masked and appreciative gallery cheering them on. It was Bender's second win in 4 years, fitting for someone who pushed for golf to be added to Clark Lindsay's competitive options. We had shuffleboard and boat races, so I thought, why don't we have a putting contest, Bender said. It includes a number of people who have never played golf, and that makes it fun. And continuing with On This Day in History, area history in 1920. The stockholders and creditors of the Champaign Produce Corporation became alarmed at the continued absence of President Alva Randall, who had been missing for almost 2 weeks. In 1970, Northwestern, striking at will by land and air, pounded out a 48-0 victory over Illinois in Evanston in the Big Ten opener for both teams. The loss dropped Illinois to 2-2. In 2005, after several months of talks about their school boards, among their school boards, three Vermilion County districts hired two consultants who would study ways the districts could merge their high schools. Two consultants, both retired superintendents from Livingston County, were conducting a state-funded feasibility study that analyzes the various ways the Oakwood, Catlin, and Jamaica school districts might merge at the high school level. The cost of the study was capped at $7,500, the most that the state would offer to reimburse. In international history, today's highlight, on October 11, 1991, testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee, Anita Hill accused Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas of sexually harassing her. Thomas reappeared before the panel to denounce the proceedings as a high-tech lynching. Continuing local news, on Interstate 74, a Tilton man dies in crash west of Danville, by the News Gazette. A Tilton man died in an early morning accident Saturday on Interstate 74, just west of Danville. Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden identified the man as Arnold B. Cravens, 54. According to state police, at 4:23 a.m., Mr. Cravens' Pontiac Trans Am was in the right lane of westbound I-74 when it struck the rear of a Toyota FJ Cruiser near mile marker 211. The Pontiac slid off the road and came to rest against the median cable barrier, police said. The Toyota struck the guardrail on the right side of I-74 and came to rest on the road. Its two occupants were uninjured. Mr. Cravens was pronounced dead at the scene, police said. Continuing with Jay Simpson, Jay's take, tackling a sore subject. Although racism still exists, it's played out. Who even has the time anymore? As much as I wish I could say nobody does, I can't, because a lot of people still do. They show it daily, and it usually comes from people who are a little older. I was raised to treat everyone with the same respect, no matter the color. In fact, my best friend for over 15 years is white, and I have a lot more close friends who are of other ethnicities. The different colors of our skin have never been a problem and have allowed us to see life from more than one perspective. Racism has to be taught, and I don't believe people are born that way. It hurts my heart to see children who are barely even old enough to walk to school alone calling other kids derogatory names. They probably have no idea what they are really even saying, just repeating what they've heard. I wish more people didn't see color. We shouldn't judge anyone, but if we do, people should be judged based on the type of person they are and the heart they have, not by the color of their skin. As much as I would love for us as people to come together as one, I know it's something that will never happen. Racism sucks, and it is unfair, but I believe it's something that will be around forever. As adults who aren't racist, we must continue to educate our children about why it's important that they treat everyone the way they would want to be treated. We should also teach them how to handle themselves if they ever have a racist encounter when we aren't around. Violence isn't the only way. Jay Simpson, a student resource supervisor at Urbana High School, writes for the News Gazette. His column appears Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays, and he can be reached at jsimpson@newsgazette.com. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Sunday, October 12th, News Gazette 2020. Stay tuned.